In the aftermath of the Democratic Party's crushing defeat in November 2016, pundits, analysts, and everyday people have debated what the Republicans did right, what went wrong for the Democrats, and what the left would have to do moving forward to have a better chance in 2018 and beyond.
Historian Mark Lilla's New York Times editorial just days after the election sparked a lot of debate and even outrage in some corners. His premise was that the left had ceded the idea of citizenship to the right in its efforts to appeal to small subsets of the American electorate. And that's the subject of his new book, The Once and Future Liberal, Beyond Identity Politics. Mark, welcome to Central Time.
It's great to be here.
So when you say identity politics, what exactly do you mean?
Well, there are two ways of understanding it. One is in the analysis of social problems. So if we're going to talk about law enforcement in this country, for example, we have to talk about race. And so you could say that's identity politics. When it comes to analyzing a problem, we have to talk about people's, whether racial or gender, identities for many problems. But there's another kind of identity politics, and that is not about analyzing a problem, but about addressing it. And beginning in, it really started in the 70s, but from the 80s on, liberal Democrats got transfixed by the notion that we're all just groups, that there's no universal democratic we, and ended up focusing on difference rather than commonality when it came to building a program to address the problems that you understand in terms of identity. So there became a disconnect between our analysis of social problems and our ability to do something about them by articulating a vision of what we are as a country together, what it means to be a citizen, and what we owe each other. So as identity consciousness increased, our political consciousness and our political effectiveness declined.
So give us a concrete example or two of, in the run-up to the 2016 election, how the left was, in your thesis, kind of being held hostage by these identity politics.
Well, it's less being held hostage than it is a mentality. I'm trying to understand a way of looking at politics that I think has gotten us into trouble. So, for example, when Hillary Clinton was on the stump, what she would often do at the beginning or the end of her remarks is she would call out to various groups that were there. And so she would call out to women, to Latinos, to African Americans, to gays, to the disabled. And, a certain kind of Democrat was very happy with that because it sounded like we're being diverse. Well, a lot of people were left out of that list. Nearly 40% of this country is Southern. One out of every four Americans is an evangelical. And in the parts of the country that we need to win back, you really find a lot of Southern evangelicals. Those people were implicitly excluded because in the Democratic idea of identity politics, there are certain groups that we focus on either because of their suffering, but also just for historical reasons. Those are the things we're interested in. And we've become detached from what people are experiencing elsewhere in the country. But even more importantly, we get out of the habit of speaking to all citizens together as a way of bringing them together to fight social problems.
So is it a question of numbers? Because didn't the GOP also use identity politics in 2016? Because they had a pretty clear and successful appeal to those white, rural, and suburban working class voters.
Well, there are two things to be said about that. One is, I think it's a convenient myth to say that that's why Donald Trump won. I think it shows an unwillingness to look in the mirror and look at what we were doing. Yes, there are the dog whistles, and we know about those. And there are more than dog whistles with Trump, certainly. I mean, the way he spoke about Mexican rapists, the way he spoke about, you know, Arab American soldiers and so on, and Muslims in general, That was pretty in the open. Do I think that that was decisive in his election? I don't think so.
No, but I'm saying more that not any of the negative things against other groups, but the ways that the GOP spoke to those same groups that you said that the left was failing at.
Well, you're assuming that these people think of themselves as a group, right? That is the group think that is the problem, that if we're not talking about that, everyone's talking to groups. And so the Democrats talk to certain groups and the Republicans talk to other groups. But, you know, the important moments in American politics have been the big changes in American politics ever since the 20th century have come when a politician comes along and is able to offer a common vision that a lot of people find compelling and put aside a lot of their differences and identify instead with the message. So from the New Deal up until the 70s, there was a sort of Roosevelt dispensation, I call it in the book, that kind of took it for granted that after, you know, the Gilded Age and all the rest and the Depression, that we're all citizens in this together, that solidarity is important, that equal rights are important, and that it's legitimate to use government in order to pull us together. And that was kind of a vision of what politics is. And it was so powerful that even Republicans sort of had to work within it. So people forget, I think, that Richard Nixon proposed a rather radical plan for a guaranteed minimum income and also national health insurance, because the terms of debate had been set by this dispensation. Then along comes Reagan, and he says, forget that picture. I have another picture of our country and our destiny and what holds us together. And that's that we're individuals. We belong to churches. We belong to our families. But government is the problem. There are very few legitimate purposes of government, that as long as the economy is growing, everyone's going to be fine. And if not, well, that's your problem. And so a new vision came along. And when that vision held, even Democratic presidents had to work within it. You know, Bill Clinton had to say, you know, we're going to end welfare as we know it, and government can't do everything, right? Well, those two pictures, visions of the country, have died. Donald Trump buried the Reagan Republican Party, and now we're at a point where we're a visionless society, and neither conservative Republicans nor liberal Democrats had managed to articulate a vision of where we can go as a country and what we are, such that people think less in terms of the groups they belong to and more in terms of this project, whether they like it or not.
Mark Lilla is a humanities professor at Columbia University's History Department. His most recent book is The Once and Future Liberal, After Identity Politics. And so you talked about FDR and you talked about Reagan and how they were successful from very different positions in appealing to this broader America. So what's the message that the left needed to communicate in order to win back in 2016?
Well, I think we get too focused on presidential elections. I mean, they follow their own rhythm as well. The thing I'm really worked up about are state and local elections, because there are large parts of the country where we are not competitive, where, you know, two-thirds of the nation's governors are Republican, two-thirds of the state legislatures are Republican. And 25 states, half of the states now, are controlled entirely by the Republican Party. We only have six states like that. So we have lost the trust and the respect of a large chunk of the country. And what needs to happen is not just making an adjustment for the next presidential election. It means a real, as I said, look in the mirror. And both a look in the mirror so we can get back in touch with our fundamental principles that we all share despite our differences. And the other is we've got to get out of our bubble. You know, we've got to go to places that we're not used to going to. You know, I tell students who will go off, you know, and spend a summer in Somalia or something like that doing very good work. But when I suggest that they go to Arkansas and work on a local election, they look at me with horror. And I tell them, look, you got to learn something about this. You got to go to places where the Wi-Fi sucks, where you have no desire to take a picture of your dinner, and where people have their heads bowed in prayer in thanks for that dinner. We have become an elite party, elites both not only in the party structure, but in the university, in the press, in the legal profession. And we all too often are just speaking to ourselves, and our conception of what's going on in the country is incredibly provincial.
We're talking with Mark Lilla about his new book, The Once and Future Liberal, After Identity Politics, and whether the left has to shift their focus to appealing to a broader range of voters in order to win elections.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with his analysis of the causes of the losses that the Democratic Party has suffered, not just last November, but in many recent years? Do you have concerns about what issues might not be addressed if the left, if the Democratic Party, turns away from these so-called identity politics? Are there issues you care about that fit under that heading? What message, if you have left the Democratic Party, what message do you want to hear to bring you back? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. We're continuing the conversation with Mark Lilla about his new book, The Once and Future Liberal, After Identity Politics.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think, looking at the Democratic Party, that their leaders, their politicians have focused too much on groups, identity politics? Do you think they need a wider, more all-embracing message to appeal to the whole country? What has gone wrong for the Democratic Party that they've lost ground, not just, as our guest says, in the presidential election last year, but in Congress and in the state governor's offices, state legislative offices as well? Do you think the Republican Party has done a better job at delivering an all-encompassing message, something that appeals to all citizens of the country? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Mark, many of the groups and issues that fall under that heading of identity politics have dealt with systematic oppression in American society. I'm thinking of LGBT people, women, and people of color specifically. If a party doesn't champion them specifically, isn't there room for concern that maybe their status will again be eroded?
Well, I can understand that, but the thing that we need to focus on and get through our heads is that you can't protect anyone if you don't hold political power. That an election is not a seminar. It's not a therapy session. It's not about speaking up and expressing yourself and where you come from. It's about winning political power. Now, what makes us liberals is that we care about these groups. And in a way that conservative Republicans don't even talk about them. That's why we're liberals. But what we have to focus on is not catering to them rhetorically, but rather winning so we can actually do something. Look, what's the greatest threat to a woman's right to abortion today? We have a constitutional right to abortion, thanks to the Supreme Court, but also thanks to the women's movement for many decades. But there are large parts of the country where a woman cannot get an abortion. Why is that? It's because these are states that are governed by conservative Republicans who have certain views about abortion, and they're using every means at their disposal to prevent a woman from having an abortion. If we can't struggle for power in that state, if we can't persuade voters in these southern and southwestern states that we stand for them, we have no way to protect a woman who wants to get an abortion. And so we have to get over the sort of symbolic jockeying over who's getting mentioned and bowed to, and actually win power, because we know we want to help these people. The real fight comes in how to translate our message in such a way that people who belong to these groups and people who don't recognize themselves. And you got to reach out. For example, a big issue the past couple of years has been police treatment of African Americans, and especially the flashpoint of African American motorists. I'm not an African American motorist. I never will be one. And so I can never fully understand. I mean, I can be as sympathetic as I can, but I can never fully understand what it's like to look in the rearview mirror, see those lights going, and feel, you know, a muscle cramp in your stomach. But if I want to get other people to take that seriously and sympathize, I need to somehow make, let's say, a white motorist somewhere else sympathize and identify with the experience of that motorist. And if we were to focus, for instance, on equal protection under the law, which is the principle at stake when it comes to these situations, then I think we can appeal to people and people will see that this is an outrage that this happens. But if, on the other hand, we do what Black Lives Matter does and take these incidents as an occasion to indict the country and its history, that's not going to win over anybody.
Let's go to our callers at 800-642-1234. And Louise in Cronenwetter is up first. Louise, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to just verify that I really agree with your guest today. And I think about the Democrats, so much of the time is spent on urban or large cities, and I feel like when you get to rural areas, that people are still fighting for better access to health care, for better access to high-speed internet, their children are on a bus for over an hour a day to get to a consolidated school district because the town can't afford to keep schools open anymore. And I feel like a lot of those people feel abandoned. I, on the other hand, my husband and I both used to be staunch Republicans, but the Republican Party abandoned us. We feel that. And, that conversion probably started about 8 years ago for us, maybe a little bit longer than that. I wanted to call to say I agree with your guest, and I'll take my comments off the air.
Great. Thanks for that call, Louise. Mark?
Yeah, well, I hear you, Louise. That's really all I can say. You know, African Americans make up about 17% of the American population. That's a sizable chunk of the population that we need to speak to. Well, rural residents of the United States also tally up to about 17%. But that's not part of our political rhetoric because that doesn't fall under an identity category. And you're talking about the school situation in these rural areas. You know, there are problems with schools in our country, whether it's in rural areas or whether it's in urban areas. And so were we to focus on the school problem and the right to a decent education and the need for a decent education for participating in the global economy today, that's something that I think Black urban parents and white rural parents would get. And that's exactly the kind of bridge building that we need to engage in.
Louise, thanks for that call. Let's go next to Owen in Wauwega. Hi, Owen.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking this. So you got to stand for something in this day and age. You have to have integrity. As an individual and to be a member of a church or a family, you don't want to have somebody in your church or your family that you can't trust. So if you take Paul Ryan, for instance, the whole time before Trump was nominated and actually got elected as president, he was talking never Trump, never Trump. And now he's his best friend. So who do you trust? You trust a guy that can't even stand up for what he believes in from one election to the next?
Thanks for that call, Owen, and I want to make sure that Mark has a chance to respond. So Owen's saying the important thing is being able to believe what people are saying during the campaign, that'll be what goes into place after.
Yeah, and what makes it difficult, I think, for our politicians now is that given that there are no governing ideologies or visions of the country where they can articulate, you know, principles that they hold on to and people recognize, what they're left to do is to kind of try to position themselves and break us up into various segments and to try to, you know, convince everyone that they're on their side. And what that leads to is a kind of, you know, kind of shadiness of position, not financial shadiness, but and when people keep contradicting in their actions what they say, then people lose trust in them. And, you know, it's perfectly understandable that Owen has the reaction that he does.
So, Mark, as we start wrapping up here, we asked earlier about what the message that the left needed to communicate to win in 2016 was. And again, not just at a presidential level, all levels. Looking forward, what do you think the messages need to be in 2018 and beyond?
Well, you know, as I said, the book is really about the very long term and kind of shifting our attention and the way we talk. And that's going to be the work of a generation, I think. But in the short term, you know, I think we really face an opportunity because both of these visions of American destiny that have died out and Donald Trump buried the party of Reagan, we have an opportunity to move in. And it just means starting, I think, by articulating the two principles that we've always stood for, solidarity and equal protection. And all the things we care about, whether it's on the one hand, you know, workers in Rust Belt towns.
And I'm sorry, Mark, but we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today. Mark Lila is a humanities professor at Columbia University in the history department. His most recent book is The Once and Future Liberal: After Identity Politics. And he spoke with us about that.